Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brian Weber on CBS Sports Radio.
Final hour of the program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. 60 minutes left, still plenty of time for you to get involved. 1-800-636-8686. Emails, romanavatake.com. Today's Twitter thread has been entertaining. Yesterday, we were looking for nice radio, trying to be positive. Silver linings, things that you have unexpectedly either learned about yourself or bumped into during the quarantine. Not surprisingly, that didn't really work. So today, we went negative. The lifeblood of sports talk radio. Your biggest vice. Things you've been struggling with since the world dramatically changed in mid-March for me. I just need a steam room. 20 minutes in there. Remember when Rome used to talk about softball guy? I'm steam room guy. Now, I'm not bringing in a magazine or a newspaper. That's only for a sauna. I've been chastised in there. I am covered up appropriately. I don't want to get too graphic. It's a family program. But it is strange what you miss. And gyms are closed again here in Southern California. And your favorite fill-in host desperately needs to sweat off about 10 pounds in the face, and then everything will be fine. That's not important. What is significant is it is the eve of deadline day in the National Football League for the franchise tag recipients. We spent 20 minutes in the first hour begrudgingly going through all of the nuances of the Dak Prescott situation. We'll get back to it in 40 minutes with our final guest. Always terrific to talk football with Will Brinson from CBSSports.com. And there's news on the franchise tag front. Not Dak. Going to have to wait for that if there's any news tomorrow. And according to reports, there'll be no movement. Cowboys dug in on a five-year offer. Dak only wants four, betting on himself. But Chris Jones was even more of the mindset that if he didn't get paid, he wasn't playing. He said he was going to pull a Le'Veon Bell. Well, the anchor of the Kansas City defense won the battle contractually with the Chiefs within the last half hour. 4 years, $85 million, $60 million guaranteed. Kansas City doing the math effectively. First, Mahomes got the Powerball contract. Now it's Jones, and probably Travis Kelce is smiling someplace, figuring he's got to get paid next. Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll talk some baseball. MLB has a lot of issues. I'm not going to bash the grand old game. A lot of you on Twitter say, hey, you hate baseball. You're transparent in your bias against baseball. I'm not going to get into my defense of my credentials on the diamond. But if you're looking for MLB to solve their major issues, clearly they know what they're doing. This is a sport that shut down the season and canceled the World Series in 1994. What solved that? Blatant steroid use and everybody looking the other way. Now, only a 60-game season, no fans in most cities in the stands. What's going to save this season? Mascots. Details coming up in 15 minutes. So let me feed the beast on social media, give you another reason to say you are an NBA fanboy. We're talking more basketball to start this last hour of the program because I think the NBA is far more interesting than Major League Baseball, and we're in a bit of a lull in the NFL beyond the franchise tag speculation, which has become tedious and repetitive. NBA actually has players on the scene in Orlando trying to get ready for games that matter. Push aside the seeding games. That's merely a cash grab. We know why the additional teams were sent to Orlando. Should have been just the 16 teams that had qualified for the playoffs when the world shut down 4 months and a couple days ago with the Rudy Gobert news. But because the NBA is trying to desperately enhance their financial situation, sent more teams there, like, say, Washington now with no Bradley Beal. They got no shot. They got nothing to play for. Brooklyn, they're just playing out the string. But they're there. to play these eight games. So all the teams that do it hit their number for their local TV contract so they can pick up that local revenue. But while we're waiting for the games to be played, life goes on. And yesterday, one of the big items of the program was unexpected in terms of confirmation. And I'm not going to be reckless, especially as a fill-in host. Jim has worked extraordinarily hard to build up this platform. Go back and read that story on theathletic.com of the rise of the Mighty 690. It'll tell you everything you need to know about Jim's incredible focus and maniacal work ethic. When you're the guest pimp in the box, you don't come in with a flamethrower and burn this thing down. So it had been percolating in NBA circles, and I'm anything but a NBA insider. No hashtag free web with two B's needed on social media. But even I had heard, because years ago I was the sideline reporter on TV for the Golden State Warriors, that, and this was no secret, Russell Westbrook was dealing with some health concerns. Well, it became official yesterday when he went to Instagram to confirm he had tested positive for COVID-19. Apparently, if you just use deductive reasoning, why is James Harden not in Orlando with his teammates? Seems logical to presume he is also dealing with a health issue. No confirmation as of yet. So we have this balancing act with what would have been a few months ago unbelievably dramatic and impactful news of former league MVP not able to head down to the resumption of play at the outset and now trying to get healthy. But the Russell Westbrook news, while I thought it was incredibly significant, was in large measure, perhaps because it's been out there in the NBA Twitterverse for a long time, met with a little bit of indifference yesterday, other than what the stakes are connected to it, what it means on the floor for Houston when they get to the postseason. If you just want to think about the likelihood that NBA games are played, I think the fact that the league pulled this off, what a Hercules on a big word Tuesday. What a massive undertaking it was to put this all together. J.R. Smith can complain about blankets and food and everything else. Our guy, Rashawn Holmes, can break quarantine to cross the line in Orlando, picking up a delivery that he could not wait for. If you believe that he was really looking for food there, was food code for something else, but we don't have any more details there. This unbelievable logistic challenge has been put together. And now the question becomes, will we actually see a champion crowned? Will the NBA be able to see this through? So part of me wants to talk actual sports, because we're so close to having, and you can dismiss the seeding games, I get it, but they count, they have meaning for the standings and playoff positioning. And part of me wants to look ahead to the postseason. But now, after the Russell Westbrook news, I can't, although I'm not going to do this style of show, I can't quibble with people now saying, okay, well, why don't we run through scenarios? What happens if Anthony Davis is unavailable? What happens to the rest of the Lakers? And I just can't go there, because in any circumstance, you never know who's going to get hurt and who's going to be available. Go back to last year, the heroic return of Kevin Durant, and then quickly it all falls apart. So let's presume full health now, and then we can make an adjustment week by week. Because if you're asking what I believe in my heart of hearts, I don't think we're going to have an entire NBA postseason. I have a high degree of certainty that the games will start, just as I believe Major League Baseball will start. But all it takes is, say, a handful of positive tests on one team, and they can't play, as we've already seen in the MLS tournament in Florida. Or if, pick a name, Giannis, God forbid, LeBron gets sick, what decision does the league make at that point? But I don't think we can deal in the world of hypotheticals, unknowns, and baseless speculation. So let's talk about the players who are there, available, and could have the chance to make a statement with the whole world watching, because I firmly believe these games are going to get monster ratings. UFC, pay-per-view, Fight Island, Saturday nights, UFC 251, Masvidal and Usman, biggest pay-per-view buy rate since Conor McGregor was in the octagon. Why? We're starved for sports. We just can't wait and watch bad reality shows and come up with James Kennedy memory devices day after day after day. We need these games. We miss these games. Part of sports is the old barroom conversation. Remember when going to a bar was a thing? Not a thing anymore in many states. So if we were just, I was going to say belly up to the bar, but I don't need to read those tweets. If we were just going to walk through the door at a saloon, sit down and have a sports conversation, if I said to you, who had the biggest opportunity to prove something in Orlando, you probably say it's LeBron, right? He's got the most on the line, given that he has never been more rested. He has never been healthier heading into the postseason. He's had plenty of time to be fully prepped, and he's been working out on his own and with teammates. Plus, he finally has the wingman he's been waiting for and engineered that transaction to get him Anthony Davis. And I made that observation earlier in the week. If you think about what could happen on other teams, I think the Giannis situation is fascinating, because going back to the debate, quote-unquote, that was entertained on many shows during the regular season about the MVP award and who deserved it. And yeah, LeBron made a push before the league shut down. If you're just going by the numbers, I think it's pretty clear the Greek Freak deserves it for the second consecutive year. You win back-to-back MVPs, you put Steve Nash aside, this is the company Giannis would be in. Michael Jordan, Kareem, Wilt, Russell, Magic could put you in the Hall of Fame. But this is not one-on-one basketball. And especially given all of the factors that these players are going to contend with that they haven't had to deal with since they played AAU hoops, the whole situation is this. They can't rely on knowing that their shot's going to be there on any given night, because they can't feed off the crowd. So I think more than ever before, depth is going to be the key. And this has nothing to do with Giannis. He's superhuman. But does he have enough assistance? Because typically to win a championship, you need a big three, or at least a big two and a half. Well, what does he really have in Milwaukee? Chris Middleton, adequate player, all-star, I should be a little bit more complimentary. Eric Bledsoe. I think Giannis, by his own admission, who says whoever wins this summer will have captured what he called the toughest championship you could ever win, is going to hit a wall out there where he realizes on a night when he just can't find the bucket, I need more help, and I don't have it right now. And what are the implications if that becomes even more apparent than he already knew? Let's say this team gets knocked out round two in the postseason. Well, what happens then? We're officially on the clock. The summer of Giannis, that is not slated until next year, begins the moment the Bucks lose. The other side is, let's say Giannis does it all and actually gets the role players to step up. If he wins a championship this summer, and it's right in front of him, because a lot of people like Shaq believe this could be the flukiest postseason we've ever seen. Well, if Giannis wins a title now, doesn't that give the Bucks the opportunity to say, you won it this year with not a lot of talent around you. Stay here, take the Supermax, get all of the endless free agent conversation out of the way, and now we're going to go get you real talent. Because the NBA always has pieces moving. So why not do that and have an opportunity to build a dynasty here in Milwaukee, of all places? Shamil Shamazzle. So, as we go through the individual stars, because the NBA is all about star power, we're looking at a handful of people who really have the most on the line. Yes, it's LeBron. I don't think it's Kawhi Leonard. He's playing with house money because he won the title in Toronto last year. He's got time to build things with the Clippers. Paul George has something to prove. Boston, probably not, because they do it as much as Jason Tatum is a star in the making with a team concept. But it's pretty clear we got separation between Lakers, Clippers, Bucks. I'll put Boston up there. And if you want to get exotic, you can say Philly could get hot, Portland get hot. But we're talking about a handful of stars. I think it's a chance for Giannis, in addition to going back-to-back with the MVP awards, to not only solidify his legacy at an early stage of his career, but make his long-term decision now. Win the title, and maybe he's of the mindset, why would I leave? I've already realized my goal. Let's make it not one, not two, not three, multiple championships in Wisconsin. I'm Brian Weber, in for Jim Rome. You can slide in. I see the phone lines lighting up. Open to taking a phone call, 1-800-636-8686. Coming up in just over 25 minutes, back to the NFL conversation. Are the Cowboys going to give Dak what he's looking for before the deadline tomorrow? We'll take you across the NFL with Will Brinson from CBSSports.com. Looking for your vice tweets. What have you been struggling with that probably isn't good for you since the lockdown started? Hit me up on Twitter. That's BW Weber. Weber with two B's. Up next, we're talking baseball. Can dudes in furry costumes save the grand old game? I'm Brian Weber, in for Jim Rome. You're in the jungle on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Brian Weber with you. Always a distinct pleasure to sit in for the best in the business. Jim Rome still in the basement. Bill Ryder in for Jim tomorrow. I'm back with you on Friday. 1-800-636-8686. More of your tweets coming up. That's BW Weber. Emails, RomeAndHaveATake.com. Coming up in 15 minutes, we talk NFL with our friend Will Brinson from CBSSports.com. Time for the huge tweet, and I think because Adam Hawk, while he was terrifically enlightened with a very articulate, well-reasoned, thoughtful Tiger Woods take, didn't like the subtle jabs that I threw in there along the way, talking about folks who work at Perkins.
Tiger!
Is trying to sabotage me. So I'll take you behind the curtain. We have a little time during the break. As much as we're enjoying the commercials and supporting our sponsors, there could be an opportunity to hand me material, say, 3 minutes before we return, a minute. Adam Hawk gives me stuff 10 seconds before. Now, I know he claims, my man, we want to keep it spontaneous. Want you to do it without censoring yourself. But I think he wants me just to implode on the air. So here's what I was handed. And I'm reading this because Adam Hawk gave it to me. Paulie T. Wall, the NBA season will start but not finish. Been there, signed, Unsatisfied Wives.
Makes me want to puke.
Do we still do the triple U? Was that before you joined the staff? That is not the huge tweet. Although this is not much better. I can't win today. Beaks in Studio City. Beaks is taking a shot at me. You know, I used to be kind of a big deal. Anyone else notice that a jet could take off from the flight deck's forehead and land on Weber's gigantic flat top? You're talking about James Kennedy, right? When is James Kelly with us? So now I have hair issues. Hey, Beaks, this is my hair. Or the best hair piece that money can buy. It's not a flat top. A lot of hairspray. So Beaks now is coming in my direction. I'm just glad that he didn't point out that we share some things in common. That's been my biggest vice throughout the quarantine. Talking baseball and mascots coming up. Here's a phone call. David in Buffalo has been patient. Hey, David, you're chatting with Brian Weber on CBS Sports Radio. What's up?
Hey, Brian, appreciate you having me on today, man. I want to go back to what you and Hawk were talking about in hour number two.
with Tiger Woods. You know, there's no doubt Tiger is great for the game. You know, all these young players have come up and they've been inspired by him. I think the tour is in an unbelievable spot. I think Tiger plays a lot of golf with these guys. You know, these young guys like a Justin Thomas, a DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka, these guys all have seen what Tiger's accomplished, and they're not afraid of him at all. But I think the one thing you left out, and, you know, you could talk all you want about his personal life. Name any other tour player that's ripped apart their swing once. Tiger did it four times with four different coaches, and he's always come out on the other end of it really good as a golfer. I mean, you know, you look at the difference in the swing from Butch Harmon to Haney to Sean Foley to basically he's doing it on his own now. I mean, Tiger's played with so many different golf swings. You know, he's played, now he's playing a different style of golf. He doesn't have the fastball that Dustin Johnson has. He can't grip it and rip it like he used to. So he's got to paint corners more than, you know, try to hit it with these guys, you know, that are a lot younger than him and a lot better shape than him. And I agree with you, man. He's playing for, you know, to get it, you know, to play well and get ready for the majors. But the bottom line is, you know, you still know he'd love to run down Snead and pass him this weekend. And yeah, at the end of the day, I think Tiger will play till his body won't let him. But, you know, as long if he's out there and he's buddies with these guys, it's going to keep his juices flowing for a long time. So I'll take your comments, Ben, and you have a good night, bud.
Thank you. Dan with Intelligent Phone Call. And I can't dispute anything you said, although I'm just going to follow the calculus that started with Earl Woods and Tiger's articulated himself. There's one number that has motivated his entire life, getting to 19 majors, having one more than Jack. Obviously, if he even got to 18 now, it would be a monumental achievement. And because he was a meteor, because we had never seen anyone with his blend of skills, and he rocketed all the way to 14 majors when he outlasted Rocco Mediate with the playoff at Torrey Pines winning that U.S. Open, and he got to 14 majors. And then, because he made terrible decisions, like many of us do, but when he got to 14 majors, the whole focus of the career was not only is he getting to Jack, he's going to leave him deep behind in the rearview mirror. And this is not a hot take. He's going to move past Sam Snead and could do it this weekend at Jack's event with the most tour victories all time. But Tiger's career will be incomplete. Not saying it's a failure. Not saying he underachieved. Incomplete, I think, is a proper adjective. Incomplete and in his own mind, unsatisfactory. He left unfinished business because he didn't get to Jack's magical 18. Still could. I don't think it's going to happen. Just getting to 15 was miraculous. I got emotional watching that, and I'm not a huge Tiger fan, to be totally transparent with you. I interviewed him years ago. Got lucky with the Stanford connection. I thought he was a giant D-bag, but that was early Tiger. People can change.
I gotten away from my core values.
Yeah. I got core issues too, but that's a whole separate thing. But that was a thoughtful call, and because I got thrown by Beaks, I didn't handle the commerce. That was the huge tweet. I didn't have much to choose from there. As we get back to business, Grainger's there to help with supplies and solutions for every industry, free access to product specialists, safety recovery guides, 24/7 support, and much more. Visit Grainger.com/recovery. Grainger for the ones who get it done. So you would be a fool to say somehow Tiger Woods had failed in his career. But if we take people at their word and look at the body of work, Tiger's talked about one thing. He structured his entire life and professional schedule about one thing, majors. And given where he was and all of the momentum he had generated, yes, he could have broken down physically anyway, but because he blew up his personal life for reasons, I'm not just talking about the lust in his heart, if you want to get biblical, but for all of the sloppiness that he couldn't even cover up his own misdeeds. I don't want to get too moralizing here. Maybe part of him wanted to get caught. I have to at some point, it's not going to be today, get to my cosplay perspective. This is forward promotion. Enjoy Bill Ryder tomorrow and Thursday. I'm back with you on Friday. If there's no breaking news, we're talking baseball and mascots. But because you're in charge of the show, I'm just keeping the chair warm. A man who, the last time we chatted, I thought had more artistic value than even the great Alvin DeLauro It is Parody Larry. Lawrence, you going to do me the favor of another song, or do you have a sports take for me today?
Hey, Webb, what's going on, man? Nice to see you back as a substitute pimp in the box. And by the way, you know Bob's Big Boy, your idol? His outfit is actually based on Adam Hawk's shirt. So listen, I actually got a surprise for you, a special guest. So take it away, Jay. Hey, Cuddy here, Webb. You know, it's been a crazy time down here on the farm, so here's my week that was. On my green acres, you can see a moose. But there's a chicken killer on the loose. My ranch, it's spreading out so far and wide. Got my gun, going to get me a raccoon's hide. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. In my treehouse where I'm going to stay. Smoking cigs and getting drunk all day. My friends all say I look like such a dork. Gonna trap me an eagle or maybe an Adam Hawk.
I was wondering, Garrett, did you need more sugar? How long were you let that going to go on and on?
Not a very good call.
A reminder, Alvin off today. Garrett doing a wonderful job running the board. Although, I mentioned that when Larry called last week and Alvin was on the ones and twos, Alvin went to run him and Larry hit the post. Parody Larry nailed it. Now, he sends me the lyrics in advance. We go through the content. So Larry had the edge over Alvin. Not today with the two-man call. And Adam Hawk was looking at me through the entirety of that. Do you have any idea what Green Acres was or is? Eddie Albert, ring a bell? Garrett was part of that cast. Especially, I liked it when you guys went from black and white to color. A fish out of water story on CBS. Here was the premise. This is what it took to get on network television. A rich man meets a woman, although it made no sense to me, and this is not xenophobic. Why did they, I forgot why they moved to the farm, but Ava Gabor's family had the farm roots. I can't remember. Somebody left it to him in the will. It was a terrible show.
Get your facts straight.
Thank you. As now I'm trying to riff about the history of TV. But it was part of the situation comedies of years ago in which unexpected things happened. Basically, it was the bizarro Beverly Hillbillies. So you had the folks from the rural part of the country, led by the great Buddy Ebsen, Max Baird Jr., Texas T, Oil. They moved to Beverly, and then Eddie Albert and the gang moved to the farm. This is terrible radio. So we have Will Brinson on the way to save us. One more segment coming up. We're talking NFL. Chris Jones getting paid by the Chiefs today. Will Dak get the money he's looking for and the years? That's the key. He wants 4 years. The Cowboys demanding five. Will that happen before the deadline tomorrow? We take you around the NFL with Will Brinson from CBSSports.com. Now it's time for
spin. Trying to stop these demons that keep dancing in my head. Down with disease, and I'm up before the dawn.
If it's fish, it must be Will Brinson on our Newsmaker Hotline. Brian Weber back with you talking NFL with our friend from CBSSports.com. Check out all of his great written content, plus he has mastered the world of audio, host of the Pick 6 podcast. Will, it's been a while. How are you? Thanks for taking the time.
What's going on, Brian? Hope you're doing well, man.
I am doing well, and we have a lot to cover. So with the deadline looming for those who got the franchise tender to work out a long-term deal with their clubs coming up tomorrow, Chris Jones got paid by the Chiefs today. 4 years, $85 million, $60 million guaranteed, but that's not the name most people want to focus on. We're still on Dak watch. Now there's urgency. We got to get a deal done or they can't hammer anything out for the rest of the entire regular season. Are you optimistic that this deadline will spur action and there'll be a compromise between the Cowboys who are offering 5 years and Dak's people who want a four-year contract?
Yeah, I'm not that optimistic, Brian, and mainly because I think when you look at what has to happen for a deadline situation normally is the word that you mentioned, which is compromise, where two sides meet in the middle and that each side sacrifices a little bit to get what they want for the greater good. The problem is Dak Prescott has already signed his franchise tender. He's acknowledged that if he needs to, he will play this season on a $31 million fully guaranteed single-year contract, which is not a bad way to work. I would, if my bosses are listening, I will also work on a year-to-year $31 million fully guaranteed deal. And so Dak has sort of taken that step forward. And I think by doing that and understanding the leverage that he has here, he's put the onus on Jerry Jones to sacrifice, basically to not even to meet him in the middle, but to cave on some certain stuff, like just cave on the year, Jerry. It's not that big a deal. And Jerry Jones, for as much as he wants Dak under contract, I think still believes, and I think the Cowboys still believe, that they should be able to sign Dak for what they thought he was worth prior to the 2019 season. I mean, statistically, he took a huge leap forward last year, and he is only – I mean, probably 2 years away from being a true free agent. And right now the Cowboys are essentially in a situation where they're at a fork in the road. They can either go the Drew Brees route, which I think was 2000 or 2012 or 2013. Everything blends together at this point. But eventually the Saints caved and gave Brees what he wanted right before it. I mean, right before. It was like 15 minutes before the franchise tag deadline. Or they can sort of start to veer down the path of Kirk Cousins, where by forcing this guy to play on single-year deals and getting him closer to the market, you tend to alienate him. And you go from a guy drafted in the later rounds who became the face of the franchise, who became an above-average quarterback, potentially elite quarterback, and yet because – and wanted to be there, and yet because you sort of pushed him away by not giving him what he wanted contractually, he ended up sort of wanting to leave. And – I'm not saying that Dak will bolt, but I think it's pretty unlikely that they get a deal done right now, which means it's tag time, and that means it's tag time 2.0 next offseason if that happens.
Which is great, because I'm hoping we have games. If we don't, we can just go round and round and round talking about tag mania. We're taking you around the NFL with Will Brinson from CBSSports.com. Let's try to focus on the top of the AFC. So clearly, the Chiefs are working the cap well with the deal with Mahomes and working things out with Chris Jones. You got the reigning champs from Kansas City and a Ravens team favored in every game this upcoming season, including a matchup in Baltimore against the Chiefs. Well, I know this is sort of a fantasy football hypothetical one, but I know you can handle it. If you had to pick between the Chiefs and Ravens, which team is more complete? Which team is better on both sides of the ball?
That's a good question. You know, I would, I think if you're saying which team is more complete, and that is what you said, but
yeah.
I would probably take the Ravens in the sense that I think that they have a ton of youthful talent at basically every position. And I'm not sure that when you go along the Ravens roster that you can really find a weakness at all with their entire roster. It's really quite amazing when you start to look at it. Whereas with the Chiefs, you can sort of pick a couple of holes here and there. I would say that the Chiefs have a higher ceiling, and that's just because of Patrick Mahomes and where he is as a passer. Look, Lamar Jackson was the unanimous MVP and is a special talent and was worthy of that award and is one of the best, you know, young players and ascending young players in football. But Patrick Mahomes is tough to beat. And so I think because Tyreek Hill is there, Travis Kelce, you have really more veterans and upside with the Chiefs. I would take the Chiefs roster if I was picking, but to answer your specific question, I think that the Ravens are probably a little bit more complete across the board, particularly on the defensive side of the ball.
And if we're just trying to evaluate overall talent levels on rosters, Cleveland, as you know, is loaded with skilled players. However, a lot to still be learned about Baker Mayfield. Now, in fairness, Baker said heading into the offseason, we were not going to hear much from him. So far, he's lived up to that. What's the outlook for Mayfield year one playing with a sharp offensive mind as a new head coach in Kevin Stefanski? How do you think he's going to do in his first year in that system?
Well, I'm bullish on him. And by the way, the not talking thing, it's a great move by Mayfield. And how about this, all NFL players? do GQ after you win the Super Bowl, not when you're projected to be like a top five Super Bowl favorite. It doesn't work out well for anybody. Jalen Ramsey, Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham. Just don't do GQ and don't do that Mina Kimes ESPN the magazine profile until after you win the Super Bowl, okay? Wait for that until after the Super Bowl. As far as Baker goes and Kevin Stefanski, I really like the marriage of the staff here. Now, I worry a little bit because of the corona offseason and because, you know, we could have limited time to practice and all that. But the one thing that Kevin Stefanski has shown us in his shortened time as a offensive coordinator is that he is willing, unlike Freddie Kitchens, to cater the offensive system to what his quarterback does best. And you saw it with Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is one of the most efficient play-action passers in the NFL. He's one of the most accurate passers in NFL history, I think number two behind Drew Brees. And when you get Cousins in these favorable situations, we saw his play elevate. Well, I think that's going to happen with Baker as well. The one thing that was really done wrong last year in Cleveland, there was a lot of things, but the one thing that stood out to me was trying to tweak the offensive system they had in place from 2018 when Baker succeeded and to make it this situation where you blend Todd Monken's air raid with what they wanted to do at Oklahoma. No, don't do that. Keep it simple, man. Like, use the rollouts that Baker was so good at. He's very, very accurate on the run. He's an excellent play-action passer. Odell Beckham is the king of – I mean, like, that's all they did in New York, just slant, slant, slant. Give him the ball in space and let him work. And I think you're going to see that from Kevin Stefanski. There's going to be an emphasis on utilizing Nick Chubb in the run game. We saw them use a first-round pick, of course, on Jedrick Willis. And they also signed Jack Conklin. That tells me they want to protect Baker, but they also want to run the football. Jack Conklin's great at that. They're going to try and establish the run game with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and then also use Baker's skill as a play-action accurate passer to go up top. I don't think that play-action will be predicated on the run. I think they'll be more than willing to just use play-action anyway. You don't need the run for play-action to be a threat. I think they'll want to have both. But I think play action, that is the key for me for Baker Mayfield's season, and I think Kevin Stefanski will utilize it heavily.
I'm Brian Weber, in for Jim Rome, chatting with Will Brinson from CBSSports.com. Will, let's stay in that division. Ben Roethlisberger back in Pittsburgh after missing the majority of last year, but he's now 38 years old. Do you think the championship window is closed for the Steelers?
No, I don't think so. And really, it's probably my fault for picking the Steelers to make the Super Bowl last year.
Clearly your fault, Will.
I'm on a heater, Brian, when it comes to ruining team seasons. So we're thinking this year we're going to do a COVID relief fund where people can bid to have me pick their team to win the Super Bowl or not pick their team. They can donate money and I will pick the team that they hate the most or something like that. TBD. At any rate, I think when you look at Pittsburgh, you have a lot of pieces in place that can tell you this could be a team that could make a Super Bowl run. I mean, they defensively, they are stacked. Cameron Hayward, one of the best interior defensive linemen in football. TJ Watt, one of the best pass rushers in football. Devin Bush came along really strongly at the second half of last year as a rookie, and I think he'll be even better in his second season. Bud Dupree has another contractual reason to be great. Minkah Fitzpatrick was outstanding. Terrell Edmonds probably flying under the radar a little bit. They have a ton of talent on that side of the ball. It can be a top five unit. There could be some regression, but I don't think it'll be a bad defense regardless. Offensively, there's plenty there. I mean, they draft Chase Claypool in order to move, ostensibly to move Juju Smith-Schuster back to the slot. You have James Washington, who's still, we're talking about a third year possible breakout. Deontay Johnson, a fantastic route runner, underrated guy who could, end up looking like a steal for the Antonio Brown pick where they got him. And then Juju Smith-Schuster, who's still really young and really talented ascending player. If Ben is healthy, this team is a Super Bowl contender. If Ben is not, it's a fringe playoff team if Mike Tomlin can work more magic again. That's why it was so surprising that they didn't go out and try and sign a Jameis Winston, a Cam Newton, somebody on the cheap that can come in and back up Ben and be a nice little parachute in case his elbow doesn't work. But look, they believe he's healthy, and if he is, this is a team to be reckoned with.
Well, great information as always. We appreciate you taking the time. As we say goodbye, let's go full circle, and I'll give you a hot take as the fill-in pimp of the box. Isn't Fish just a cheap knockoff of the Grateful Dead?
No, I don't think so. I am a huge Dead fan, though. In fact, the Dead, their Saturday stream, or their the Shakedown stream they did last Friday was actually a 90s show from Carter Finley here in Raleigh. It's worth checking out if you haven't seen it. But I think Fish tends to veer a little more into the jazz and funk that maybe the Grateful Dead weren't quite as much into. Whereas they're more of like a, I know they're not Southern, but they're more of an American rock band from the 70s. Fish is a little more funk and jazz influenced than the Dead were.
Excellent knowledge. Thank you, Will.
Hey, Brian, have a great day.
You too. Grateful Dead tapes, early on, Magoo's Pizza. Adam Hawke, I saw them at Frost Amphitheater on campus at a school in Palo Alto. I'm not as suburban as I seem. Will was terrific, so we're going to make that our huge call. Brought to you by Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges and helps if you need to fix them. Another way, Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details. I'm back on Friday. Thankfully, we won't have to talk about Dak Prescott then with the deadline coming up tomorrow. Figured out the issue I had in the program midway through. Because I'm wearing a Ron Burgundy-colored jacket, when I went for my dear friend James Kelly name, where there's an apostrophe in there, over on the teleprompter in the corner, somebody had it queued up to the next show that's coming in. It's a reunion of Vanderpump Rules. It said James Kennedy. My bad. I'm Ron Burgundy. I'm Brian Weber. A lot of people to thank. Will was great. Eric Pincus, Bleacher Report, Pete Futak, collegefootballnews.com. Thanks to Jim, Craig Kitchen, Mark Chernoff, all the fabulous people at CBS Sports Radio. Adam Hawke was terrific. Garrett Ritz, stellar. Bill Ryder is back tomorrow. Enjoy, Bill, and I'll return on Friday. Have a great day, and we'll do it again as you keep it locked on CBS Sports Radio.